I suggest we continue with our second talk of this session by Lubomir Buczek and Daniel Santiland about WebGL magic and scientific data. Stage is yours.
Hi. Thanks, Joachim. So I think we've heard a little from Ivan, maybe a bit more enthusiastic than me. Let's see. I'll try. That we can actually use the browser to do some nice things. And we're going to talk about two of these things. So we've been working and looking into some of the things that he has also been actually presenting. So actually showing scientific data directly in the browser. So in this respect, so we will be talking about we called it Plotly and Graphly. I think having a Y at the end of the library makes it much better. One takes a bit the approach of looking at raster manipulation and this rendering in the web browser. And the other, we worked with vector graphics and how we can actually move away from that and do things in the shader to actually get some performance. So maybe from us, just to say, so we're from EOX. You've seen some talks about raster manipulation from Joachim Marchette, and also Fabian tomorrow, and our colleague Peter will be talking about some other libraries. So we work mainly, basically most of our developments are free and open source. So I think our main client being ESA, I think it's really nice to see that that we can move like that and do our developments like that. And what we have seen is that as we go along the years and go from one project to the other, we're actually trying to we see that modular development, so instead of doing like big things that are usually don't fit exactly the use case of every person, we're trying to go like more piecewise. So just have small modules that are kind of interchangeable and can be used by everybody. And I think we're seeing this more and more, and we're seeing in that our GitHub repos are being used, I think, and we're seeing some pull requests because they are like nice individual components that can be really used independently. So we see this like GeoTIFF.js and Plotly.js and Graphly, maybe at some point, which I'll present a little bit more. That's a bit about us. I'll let Lubo talk a little bit about Plotly and maybe I think this was the initial stages were presented already the last Phosphor-G. We'll talk a little bit, or he'll present a little bit about what new things have come along and what he has also helped implement or integrate at least. Yeah. So.
Okay. Hi, everybody. I will first shortly introduce Plotly. Plotly is a really lightweight library for putting one-band raster data on a canvas. That's as simple as it can get. Daniel said, it has already been introduced 3 years ago. Since then, the development has gone to a phase where everything that we want Plotly to do, it already does. And the main addition has been the moving to the ES6 module style to be able to import more easily and to go with the standard movement, and also adding the raster algebra functions to be run directly on the shader. As being said, the purpose of the library is to quickly set a color scale to the data that we give it. It tries to use the WebGL if possible, which all new browsers definitely can. It also provides a fallback to software, to standard software rendering if the WebGL is not provided. However, in most of the browsers, this will not happen. The motivation to create the library some years ago was to try to colorize the raster images in the browser, because in some cases it might be much faster, in some cases not. It always depends on the use case and on the speed with which you can actually get the image to the user's browser. So previously all the renderings were done or by us in a WMS with some preset styles, but then every change of the style needed a new fetch on the server. So another option then emerged as getting the full file by WCS and then try to render it by WebGL. Another option, which emerged a few years earlier, is with GeoTIFF.js to get the part of the GeoTIFF parsed, and then only the relevant data or relevant bands will be visualized. So what the library can do is basically only these things. It should be enough for the use case that we provide it to. So the new thing is the dataset combination, where for each pixel, given the math formula using the plus minus signs and the normal mathematical operations, and also some functions like sinus, cosinus, basically anything that the underlying GLSL shading language can provide, compute a value. And this value will then be colorized based on a color scale. I've actually prepared a demo, which then I figured out that is not working. So sticking back to the screenshots, good old screenshots. First is a static demo, which on the click just showed some arbitrary data. This is a sinus function. So the first part actually only produces our values, and then the plotty plot chart is created. It targets the canvas element, it sets the data, and it sets the width and the height. That's all the input that it needs. You can set the color scale or use the default one, and then you render it through the canvas. If we want to show it on some more sensible data, another image is showing data from the synthetic aperture radar, where several input elements can trigger the change of the color scale, like here, where the change is instant because we are rendering everything in the web GL. We can set the min and max, basically select the domain, which can then be either clamped or not, which also has an influence on the resulting image, of course. If we don't want to directly render only image to a canvas, we can use the rendering to a canvas, for example, in open layers, which allows to render over the open layers canvas, where the demo that you see is rendering digital elevation model on OpenLayers base map. And the valleys and the mountains are cut using the clamp functionality. The last demo is showing a Sentinel-2 RGB near-infrared image, where here all the first three bands, RGB, are used, where just the intensity of the image is computed for each pixel, which means R plus G plus B equal divided by 3, and a simple color scale is applied on the resulting values. And by simply clicking a button, you can change the math expression that you are applying on the image, which, for example, here is good old NDVI index and setting a domain and, for example, different color scale. A quite similar image can be obtained using different formula, where one of many formulas for detecting chlorophyll A is used, where again the three bands, here the RGB bands are used and their specific wavelengths. And again, a domain is set on this resulting image. Those were just a few really simple examples what the library can do. And there are several more. For example, you could use a Cesium to visualize a 3D view, and then Plotty can be also added on top of that to visualize some nice behavior or some motion. With this, I'm actually giving word to Daniel to talk about the second part of our attempt.
Thanks. So, yeah, going just for a second back, maybe, hopefully, no need to go to the fragment shader directly. So, yeah, you can use the library to use some expressions, hopefully a little bit more and easier than having to dig down deep into what you're doing. So, all right. So next library is Graphly, and the idea was so not necessarily EO data. That is why it's in brackets in the title. Basically, we have seen in many projects that we need to show a scatter plot. And we've seen a lot of screenshots of showing like timelines and things like that. So points connected with lines. And when we began with this adventure, we basically said, okay, it makes sense to use scalable vector graphics in the browser. Easy, you can manipulate them, interaction, you have everything that there is to have, but we have seen that this is not always the solution we need. So there is like a crazy amount of libraries that allows you to do this, that they are sometimes based on D3 or not, they're their own thing. And they are usually like, you can generate so many types of plots. And but when it comes to solving your specific use case, if it's not matching exactly what the library does, it gets complicated quite quickly, and this is what we were seeing. And especially one of the things that was a main issue for us is that we were trying to render, I don't know, more than 6,000 points at least, which was really difficult to do with SVG. The browser resources for that is ridiculous. So we began with the idea like, oh, okay, shader can do everything, right? So let's do it in the graphics card. I mean, basically, it's not inventing anything new, but I think we've brought multiple things together that work really nicely together, and I think it's quite a nice thing to have. So this is something at least that we needed. So maybe let's compare vector graphics against raster. So what does the one thing give you and the other not? So with SVG, you have like really nice manipulation. You have groups. You can transform complete groups. You can do a lot of really nice like animations and really a lot of nice stuff. But as I said, one of the main limitations is really how much stuff you can use. So the system gets quickly overwhelmed. So you have all of this as nodes, and this has to be kept track of. So that's quite intense. And the raster, on the other hand, like once you render it, you're basically saying this pixel is this color, and that's it. Like there's no real way of interacting with this, or yeah, there are some ways of doing it, but no trivial ways. So it's difficult to interact and to manipulate, but it's like super fast usually, depending on how you use it. But yeah, that's the idea. So what did we do? We thought, okay, let's try to win back the things that we lose using Rasta. So basically, how do we address and get information of what we're rendering? And what we do is, and this is often done in computer graphics, to just render the image twice. And once you render like what you're showing to the user, and the other time you use a unique color, and you can go insane. You have the human eye does not differentiate, but if you're picking the color, you have like 1 billion combinations. No, 16 million. So you can render a lot of things, and then just use a different color for every point, or depending on what you're rendering. So, and then you have this raster, and when you move the mouse over, you just pick the color and use the color as a reference to your actual attribute. So you keep the interactivity there. Here is so just the code for reading the pixel value, which is super fast. Just you can do it on mouse over, so that's no problem. The next thing we combined is it would be nice to just show rectangles as in the plot, but as soon as you're showing one or two parameters, you want to differentiate them somehow. So you need different forms. You need like triangles and squares, and it would be quite painful, or I mean, at least not as efficient to do this as primitives, so actually rendering this. So again, the fragment shader to the rescue, you can do some pixel manipulation, which works great. So we use just the dot primitive we're rendering. And so there's some, really nice, descriptions of what can be done, and great resources linked here, which gave a lot of inspiration. And apart from that, you can use instancing, which again, even further, so you're using like an instance of the same object with different characteristics. I don't know how deep we want to go into this. So what you do is you basically define your information, let's say in JavaScript, generate some attributes of what you need, like the position, the value, size, and symbol. Let's say this would be five attributes you have for each of the dots you're representing. And then you bind this, create a buffer, and pass it, say, the location for the shader, and then basically pass it to the shader, let's say. This is how you define and pass the information to the shader. Instancing is WebGL 2, but there's compatibility for WebGL 1, where you can try to get the extension, and if the browser supports it. So I think I will not go more into detail. If there are questions, just feel free afterwards. So what can you do? So how long time? Just to 1 minute. All right, so this is taking longer than expected. So this is basically what you can do in the shader. You can do some calculations of the distances, and then you can create different shapes for each of the dots you're rendering. So this gives you, like, for example, this would be how you render a circle using just the let's say dot primitive, which would be a rectangle. And this is basically how it looks like. So we're here it's an example of three different parameters we're rendering with the scatter plot, and they are all just dot primitives, but just in the fragment shader we apply some calculations to manipulate each of these points. And the other neat feature that we combined is, like, let's say debounce rendering. So instead of rendering for every manipulation that you do, you do introduce a debounce rendering that you actually use a fixed image and manipulate the image, like scale it and transform it. And once the movement is done, the rendering is done again. So these three things are combined to create a really strong and flexible, let's say, not only scatterplot, but mainly scatterplot rendering library, which we think it's quite nice to have and we have used in many projects already. All right, so depending on the questions, maybe in the 5 minutes I can give like a, I'll just give like a super short to give you an example of what this means. Sorry. So let's say basically this is it. You can interact with it. You can zoom in, zoom out, and again you can for each of these values you can get information on every point. And as you have the data here, you can play with filtering. So there's a lot of stuff going on. You can, as we're doing it directly on the shader again, you can play with the color scale, which is, you can change the color scale, which parameter is rendered. So yeah, a lot of possibilities. And yeah, that's basically it. So feel free to give it a try if you're using some plots. The data can be loaded just in a certain object and arrays, so it should be fairly easy to integrate to some of your projects. All right, so thanks.
Yeah, thanks for the great talk. I know there's been a lot of work and sweat going into it. So are there any questions from the audience? Of course.
Is this ready for production?
Yeah, you'd reserve this one from the previous, right? Is this ready for production was the question. Yeah, for sure. Depends on your production. It works. Might there be a bug somewhere? For sure. But we use it in ESA we call pre-operational, which is important because it's on our servers and not on their servers. It has had a good, let's say, use from different users, and some bugs have been found, and we try to keep track and solve the things that appear. Yes, you try to fix the 95%, and the 5% left, you try to fix when it pops up, yeah.
Okay, next question. No? Don't be so shy.
There.
Yeah, okay.
So the question was if it integrates with other tools, like for example OpenLayers. Difficult to say. In principle, you give this thing a canvas element, and that's it. Like it doesn't need more. The question is, I don't know, like how you combine a plot with a map. I guess this thing could render over the OpenLayers canvas. Maybe there's some conflicts on which rendering is triggered first and the other, but I don't know, you could just create a window that, let's say, in OpenLayers you click something and then you get a timeline with a pop-up or some, and this should work more or less out of the box. You just have to style the container you put it in, and that should be it. Yeah. All right.
Okay. Is there no one else? Okay, good. Then, yeah, give applause to the presenters. Thanks.
Thank you.